야, 너 그래서 니 무서운
또 쌍문 치킨이야. Did you get my SMS, Mama Kaka? Did you get my SMS?
Wow, me está gambón. How are you?
Hey, trying to survive.
No other way. Yeah, we miss you so much.
Trying to survive. Dizer kuba ndisaphukela
let our shadow minister get settled before we start. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, firstly let us welcome the DG, the Director General, the new Director General, Ambassador Kingsley Makube. You're welcome, mm-hmm. sir. And welcome our old associate, Mama Roshin Singh. Then our DDG. I don't want to pronounce your name, but but all the same, say you're welcome. And part of the team, that ma'am. Anami Malian, you are welcome, Anami, to Parliament, to this committee on tourism. But before we start our deliberations, let me thank all of you, particularly the Department of Tourism, for facilitating a very, very successful World Cup beyond our expectations. Really, the Football Friday that you acted as a catalyst for, the team building that we were part of and leading, really, we really, this thing, appreciate your effort. We may differ, we may squeal sometimes, but we really appreciate your effort. We can see the opening with Bishop Tutu dancing there. We can see Shabalala scoring the first goal. We can see the final with Madiba waving away and Iniesta sealing it for Spain. It was really excitement. We were really excited and really your role was not small as team SA Tourism and as team Department of Tourism. We appreciate that. So without much ado, and given the time constraints we have, we shall get into our program. The first item will be a presentation by the Department of Tourism on Tourism Global Competitiveness Program. That is will be for about 60 minutes. And then if it indeed reaches 60 minutes, then we shall try and trim discussions. And I shall request instead of deliberations and discussions, we just ask questions of clarification. And then we are still going to meet the department during the annual report later this year. So I don't think there's anything in much of a hurry. And then number three will be announcements. And well, let me just do the announcements right now. The annual report of the department and that of SA Tourism for 2009-2010 financial year has been tabled and circulated. This has been done on time, and we thank the department for that. Some departments submit Section 65 because of delays and so forth, and we appreciate your efficiency there. And then invitations, number two, invitations to attend World Tourism Day celebrations to be held in Limpopo on the 26th to the 27th September will be forwarded to all committee members this afternoon. So there will be that event in Limpopo, and then invitations. We were invited when we went to Limpopo. Now we are getting formal invitations. That is the message. Then we'll close. So over to you, over to the Department of Tourism.
Chairperson, thank you very much. And thank you very much to members of the committee. Chairperson, thank you very much for giving us more time to do our presentation. We would try, Chairperson, to be as short as possible to allow better interaction and to address some of the issues that members of the committee may have, and also to factor in suggestions that may come from members of the committee as we move forward. Chairperson, the update on the Tourism Global Competitiveness Program, this research, Chairperson, was done about 2 years ago by the UN World Tourism Organization. Most of the elements that are contained in the study are still relevant. However, given the recent successes we've had, as you alluded to, as a country with respect to the hosting of the World Cup, there has been a shift in the right direction in our own view. So I think a study that will be conducted later on would reflect on some of these issues. For instance, Chairperson, before the World Cup, we were ranked as overall 128 in terms of safety. So the safety issue was the biggest concern before the World Cup. You recall when there was an incident in Cabinda, there were questions in the international media about the safety of the World Cup in South Africa. And if you look at the proximity of Cabinda in South Africa, it's about 6-7 hours flight. Now, these are issues that were affecting us, but there's been change since people have been here. The reliability of our police to be able to react to some of these issues has also been a downside in terms of that study. And given the professional manner in which the South African Police Services dealt and handled the World Cup, that perception is indeed going to change. There are issues, Chairperson, that are actually working against us in terms of the variance that they are using to measure how competitive we are, and Roisin will take us through some of those details. But there are issues that are very positive in terms of how we are rating as a country. For instance, we are rated number one with respect to the presence of major car rental companies in the country. So they use that as a measure to gauge our competitiveness. The other related variants that have been used, some of them are very much advantageous to us. But having said that, Chairperson, does mean that we have to be complacent as we move forward. The areas that we need to close these gaps to ensure that we become as competitive as possible, to ensure that tourism keeps on contributing mainly on two issues, the job creation and the contribution to the GDP. But Chairperson, with your permission, Roisin can take us through the presentation, and then we would really be most grateful if members of the committee are also also to make contributions in terms of how best to close some of the gaps that may be identified in the presentation. Thank you, Chairperson.
It's our pleasure. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The DG has gone through with you what we mean by competitiveness. How do we make sure that we deal with the drivers and the barriers for tourism so that we see what's stopping people from coming here and what's actually making them come here? So how can we make sure that in both those levels that we continue to put our efforts in the right places? And this study was done, the DG's gone over with you the World Economic Forum figures and how the World Economic Forum ranked South Africa 61 out of 133 countries in 2009. So I won't repeat that. I will just point out that according to the World Economic Forum, there are some areas that we are weak at. And in our study, which was done in 2003-04, we actually put out a report in that time on what were the key factors around competitiveness, how were we performing compared to other destinations, and what are the strengths and weaknesses. We've then done a new study this year in 2010, but what came out of the 2003-04 study is that the key areas that determine competitiveness, firstly, it's market access. So how easy is it for people to get to South Africa? And the issues that we'd look at there are new markets that come up as opportunities for us, and also issues like visas. The second one would be air access. Can people actually get a seat if they want to come to South Africa? So that's another key area that is a driver of tourism. The third area is skills. What kind of skills do we have in the sector as a whole? And we need some kind of strategy to make sure that we have the skills in the right places where we need them. Fourthly is public transport. And a lot of this doesn't sit under tourism itself. It sits under the Department of Transport. But it's a cross-cutting issue because public transport affects people traveling around the country. The next one is on transformation. At the time, in 2003-04, we didn't have any sector codes. Since then, we do actually have them, and they are in place. Information. How easy is it for people to get information about the country? And the kinds of things that have been looked at since then are things like visitor information centers, call center numbers, websites, because that's a key place that people look for information. So since 2003-04, what's on the right-hand side is some of the areas that have been addressed. But most importantly is innovation in terms of the kinds of experiences that we offer to visitors, product development, investment in tourism, and SME development. These are critical areas for us to be looking at together with the department to make sure that there is an investment portfolio, that we implement a second economy strategy, that we make sure there is SME development through the Tourism Enterprise Program, because this is going to make us more competitive as a sector, both internally compared to other sectors in South Africa, but also compared to our global tourism competitors, other countries in the world that we compete against. So then we come to what did we do this year? Just before I do that. Based on the previous study that was done, there were 20 development areas that were looked at in terms of product development and ensuring that we invest in these areas or that we ensure there is investment. And 9 of them were selected as priority areas. And if we look at them, they're very much what we would call rural tourism. Because those are the areas where one needs to develop further in order to get spread. And that map shows you in the red circle where the idea was to actually develop an investment portfolio. So if people are looking to invest, we suggest that these are the areas that should be looked at. Incentives can be drawn up. How do we get more investment and development in these areas? And that was obviously based on the fact that it's underutilized, but that there is a rich natural heritage and resource that is available in those areas that can be exploited for tourism. So then we come to the 2010 study. In the 2010 study, we didn't do it as detailed as the 2003-04 study. And I need to also maybe just up front explain that this is really based on, while it's based on the products in South Africa, we base the study on the foreign arrivals. So we're not looking here specifically at domestic tourists, but it's looking at anyone outside our borders. So SADC would be included, Africa, as well as outside Africa, when we looked at the kind of tourists that we're looking for. So what we did is we started looking at how do we compare as a tourism industry compared to key competitors, and we chose Australia, the US, Kenya, Thailand, and Brazil as the countries that we're going to compare ourselves against. And the reason for that is because if you speak to our target market, instead of coming to South Africa, they could choose to go to Brazil, or they could choose to go to Australia or Thailand. So we really chose the markets that become part of the consideration when people want to visit South Africa. The second thing that we did is we looked at other sectors of the economy in South Africa, manufacturing, the construction sector, the banking sector, etc., and we looked at what is the performance of tourism in terms of the economic contribution of tourism as compared to these other sectors. That's why it's an internal benchmarking. The third part is we looked at the visitor. So in the head of the visitor, what are the drivers and the barriers to growth? So what would make people come here, what are they looking for, and what would make them not come here? And lastly, again, is also looking at the tourists, what are their desires, what are their satisfaction levels, and what are their usage? This slide summarizes most of what's in the rest of the slides, and so I'm putting the summary up front. And then when I go, I'm not going to go through every slide after this because it explains the summary. So if we just look at the summary slide and we look at some of the travel and tourism parameters, the first one is jobs. And the year is 2008. The growth pattern is from 2003 to 2008. So over 5 years, we've looked at what has happened with jobs across the key markets that we are competing with. And in South Africa, we have 439,000 direct jobs in tourism and over 1 million indirect total. So if you count indirect and direct, total jobs. And over the five-year period from 2003 to 2008, we had a 4% growth in jobs in tourism, overall growth. Later on, I'll show you that if you just look at direct, we had a 2% growth. Okay? So overall, in jobs, we had a 4% growth. Australia had a 0% growth. So they're having jobless growth. Their tourism is growing, but they're not growing jobs at all. The U.S. had minus 1% in the same period of 5 years. Thailand had 2% growth in overall jobs. Brazil at 4% and Kenya 1%. So when you look at that, you know, we are concerned, obviously, we constantly want to create jobs in the sector. We've got to make sure it happens. But if you look at us in relation to competitors, we're pretty equal in terms of the growth rate on jobs. The second figure there is the number of arrivals that we had in 2008, in thousands. And if you look at the U.S., they get 58 million arrivals into their country. We get 7. We've stripped out visitors, and we're just talking about tourists. And then Australia, 5.5, Thailand, 14.2, Brazil, 5.1, and Kenya, 1.3. And then the growth rate on arrivals in South Africa is 9%. So what that's telling you is that we're growing on arrivals. We're not necessarily creating as many jobs, though, but we are growing on arrivals. And then if I go below that, it's our contribution to GDP, okay? And then the growth in GDP contribution. So we've had a 13% growth in GDP contribution overall with 3% percentage contribution to GDP directly. So what is a very good figure for us is that there is a 13% growth. So there's a 9% growth in arrivals and a 13% growth in GDP contribution. So as a sector, we are doing fine in terms of the revenue that we are generating out of tourism. because again, we compare to the other markets. The only market that is doing really, really well is Brazil, because they've got 24%, and Kenya is also doing better than us. They have a 16% growth. So that figure of 13, 12, 5 is the percentage growth in GDP contribution over 5 years. The figure underneath that is the actual contribution to GDP directly and indirectly. So our direct contribution to GDP in tourism is 3%, and if you compare us to the other markets, in Brazil, it's only 2.2% contribution to GDP from tourism. Kenya is 4.8% contribution to GDP from tourism. Obviously, this was done before the World Cup, so we expected that after the World Cup, we will have a boost in arrivals. Australia has had a very bad year in 2008, and that's dragged them down quite a bit. And also in Thailand, they also had a bad year. Brazil is expected to do much better because they're going to be hosting both the World Cup and the Olympics. And Kenya's also had political unrest in the country, which has affected their tourism numbers as well. Okay, so I think actually if we take out anything from this presentation, that's the key numbers if we have to look at an argument that one might need to make is why is tourism important to South Africa? It's critical. So I'm not going to read through the rest of the slides, but just very quickly, just say that in the last the years between 2002-2008, we really saw.
Excuse me, there's a hand up there.
Chair, thanks. I know we don't ask questions during the presentation, but this is not really a substantive question. Can just ask something for clarity, because I think I might confuse. I'm already confused about one particular figure. May I ask through you, Chair? Just ask Rasheen Singh. That figure on tourist arrivals in 2008, you've got there 7.08, I think it is. I'm trying to read from a long distance. And you'll notice at the bottom says after taking out the day tourists, which we understand because the definition of a tourist is someone who spends at least one night. But I don't understand that, and that does seem to be a very important figure because it affects that entire chart. Because we know that in 2010 we had just under 10 million, and I can't understand how I jumped by 3 million in 2 years. That's not the figure we've always been quoted by SA Tourism before.
Correct. Mr. Kronbuk, I just need a few minutes to explain this. Up to 2008, we were getting figures from Stats SA that we regarded as visitors to the country. In 2009, they told us that when they were counting, there were some people that were actually same-day visitors that were getting into the lot of, that we were counting as tourists to the country. So since last year, January 2009, they began separating out what is a visitor and what is a tourist, okay? And we were not able to put out those figures until the entire year 2009 was completed because there was nothing to compare it against. So since January 2010, we've been putting out a tourist figure. So what we did is we adjusted this one so that we could get that figure correct. But I actually think that maybe this will require a little bit more time and maybe to come to you with those figures when we come and do our annual report, because we'll explain now how we are speaking about figures. Okay. Thank you for picking it up. Yes. It is a big change. And it strips out about 2 million for the year. Okay. So I've kind of covered some of these, except the last point there that I've always been asked about, but that what we found in terms of drivers of performance is that when we look at the spend in tourism, and this is not just the spend on marketing, but generally in tourism that government spends, we find that Australia spends almost twice what South Africa spends. So it's 1.8 times more than what South Africa spends on tourism. In terms of the other performance parameters, as we saw, we witnessed a strong growth in arrivals, but we were finding that we have a decline in the length of stay. So people are staying for less time than they used to be before, and whereas in Australia, they seem to capture the most nights per tourist. People in Australia sometimes stay at about 30 nights on average, and we have a length of stay for land tourists being quite low, and for air tourists being between 6 to 10 nights. Land tourists can stay between 1 and 5 nights. In terms of the economic benefits, what we found in looking at the study is that if you look at how many tourists does it take to create one job, in South Africa it's, the figure is quite high. It takes 16 tourists to create one job. And in Australia it's 11 tourists to create one job. And what we found obviously is that because we have land and air arrivals, we can't strip them out completely. And it's very hard to do the ratio, but it could be that if we only looked at air arrivals, that ratio might actually come down. So this is the slide about how many jobs are created per arrival. And you can see there that our figure is quite high in terms of the number of tourists that we need to create one job. And what this is telling us is that, firstly, it could be, well, you need to create more jobs faster, but that's harder to do. It's easier to get more people. So if we get more people, we can create more jobs. Although we need more tourists to create a job, what we did find is that for every foreign arrival, we get more spend. So we actually have $20,000 per arrival for each job that we create, compared to Brazil, which has 2,000. So what's happening in Brazil is that these are very low-cost jobs. So while they only need 2.3 people to create a job, they are very low-cost jobs that they are creating in the tourism sector. And we compare quite favorably with all the other markets in terms of the amount of spend that we get per arrival. I mean, per job, sorry. Now that was looking at us against other countries. I'm now going to look at us against other sectors of the economy, because I said that we need to see, if we look at the country internally, how is tourism doing compared to other sectors of the economy. And this slide is that what we can see here is this is growth in contribution to GDP. And if you look at this, the only sector that's done better than tourism in the last 6 years, 2002 to 2008, is construction. They had a 10.4% growth, and tourism had a 10.2% growth in terms of the contribution to GDP. If you look at all the other sectors of the economy, mining, minus 0.1%. Transport, 5.3%. So this is showing us in South Africa how is tourism doing in terms of its growth to GDP contribution. Goes in a little bit more detail here, which this slide is showing us growth in employment and growth in GDP, and the K and the J there is our direct and indirect contribution by tourism. You want to be in the top quadrant of the slide, and then you are doing quite well. And we're doing fine in terms of our indirect contribution. Our direct contribution could go a little bit higher up there, so that we're doing well both on percentage in employment growth as well as contribution to GDP, because our employment in terms of direct jobs is still sitting at about 2%. Hence that slide. We then looked at market access and how we are seen as a brand in some of the markets that we market in. And what we see is that the awareness is quite high of South Africa, and we are quite liked as a destination. What we saw in these slides is that we're doing quite well across the European markets in terms of awareness and people remembering us and know the brand of South Africa. And in addition, also Kenya shows a high consideration to visit South Africa. In places like India and Italy, our awareness is not that high, but they're very positive about South Africa. And there's a high short-term consideration. So, in fact, in our research, there's more than 20 million people that want to visit this country. And we are rated quite high in areas like nature and wildlife. And the negative factors, though, which we see as barriers to growth, is that there's a perception of us being unsafe and offering poor value for money. And those keep coming up as the two that cause people to choose another destination above South Africa. They do see us as being adventurous, breathtaking, and unique. They primarily use the internet and word of mouth to gather information about South Africa. And most people who come here for leisure. And after people have come here, there's a high recommendation of South Africa as a destination to their friends and family to also visit. Now, this is a slide that shows the barriers to visiting South Africa. And we put together, including Kenya and Nigeria, and then most of the other markets where we see as core markets to us, the target population that we're looking at is 89 million people. Of that, about 58 million are aware of South Africa. Of that, 24 million are aware and considering to visit the country. And about 7.59 million who say that they will visit South Africa in the next 18 months. But of that, we get about less than a million that come from those countries in that market, the markets that we've looked at. So the leakage that we have on the side there, especially from the yellow bubble, which is about considering visiting, and then those that want to come in the next 18 months to not coming, we ask them, why would you not come? Now, there is a large percentage that say that another destination is more appealing, so they decided to go somewhere else. But then the next big figure for not visiting is it's too expensive to get there. And then the next one is general issues of safety, and the third one is concerns for my personal safety. So those red blocks are very much about value for money and about how people feel about the safety of the destination. Now, we know that this might look different this year when we do this brand tracking, because we do this twice a year. We check in February and we check in November people's perceptions of the country, and I'm sure when we go through this November, that safety figure is not going to look the same. Then after people seek information on South Africa, why do they not visit us? And what comes up there is the general issue of safety and concerns for my personal safety and then too expensive to get there. So these are the perceptions that at a marketing and brand level we have got to deal with, because they are the key barriers for people getting here. The issue of too expensive once here is lower than too expensive to get here. But it is a concern. So the top reasons, we're saying about 36% of people don't come to South Africa because of the price of a plane ticket. And then in terms of the perception of safety and security, the red bar is people who have never been to South Africa, and the yellow bar is people who have visited. And if you look at the difference between 2004 to 2009, if they have not visited us, the perception has stayed the same. They give us a score of 3.3 out of 7. But if they have visited us, it's really gone up. It's really a lot more positive. We're getting a score of 4.6 out of 7 for people who have been to the country. So it's their perception out there that we've got to deal with to ensure that when they are searching for information, they're not only seeing negative issues about the country. The other areas on drivers and barriers to growth, the one is airlift. We've spoken a bit about it earlier. We have less capacity to visit the country in terms of airlift than we had in 2002. I think we used to have 66 airlines servicing South Africa. We now have 53. Then our carriers, even domestically, operate on very high load factors, meaning that the plane is quite full. So there's not much capacity to take other people. There's also not much capacity to vary the rates that people charge, because the competition isn't there. They're traveling with full planes. We do have good connectivity to international locations, but they're not always direct flights. So if you look at a country like China, there isn't a direct flight to China. That's a big constraint to getting more people to come to South Africa. They have to connect. Well, they can connect via Hong Kong, and they can connect via Singapore, but it's still a connection that they have to do. Where there are direct flights, we're seeing that that can really lead to growth in tourism. So, for example, India, the direct flights really help with the fact that we had a 17% increase last year. The car rental industry is also important and an enabler of tourism growth, and we're doing very well in this industry. It's becoming more competitive, and there's a lot more capacity that is available. There may be issues, the industry says, in terms of fuel prices. This is telling you what the routes are and what's happened between 2003 and 2008. So if you look at a country like Germany, you'd see that we have less capacity coming from Germany to South Africa. The yellow line is smaller than the red line. And France as well. We've lost capacity in those markets. We've increased a bit in the U.S., and we've increased in the Netherlands. From the U.K. and Australia, it stayed the same. But as I was flying here this morning, I read in the Business Day this morning that BA is going to stop one of its flights to South Africa. Currently has double dailies, and it has a third flight five times a week, and they're not going to do the third flight five times a week. So again, we can see after 2010, we might have a problem again on Ennis. And I think if there's one issue we take out of here, it's the biggest issue we've got to deal with, is how do we get more airlift into the country. The other side of the slide is about people traveling from South Africa out to the destination. This is load factors of domestic airlines. It's pretty high, especially on the low-cost airlines, with SAA sitting at about 68% of the domestic load factors, Kulula 88%. Accommodation, we've been getting, obviously now also again after 2010, we'll see a different picture on accommodation because there has been more supply in accommodation. Maybe the occupancy won't be as high as it has been, but there's definitely been very good growth in the accommodation sector on revenues, and tourists are generally spoilt because there's abundance of accommodation in the country. Skills and service levels is a key enabler of growth. It's something that one measures on competitiveness. There is a problem because the quality and the skill levels of employees in tourism are generally not very high. So we have found there are lots of programs that have been launched to try and deal with this. So we come to the last two slides, which is our recommendations and the way forward. So I wasn't as long, Chairperson, but in terms of the recommendations, essentially if we want to grow on the supply side of tourism, which means what we have, we need to look at the issue of skills and training a bit more, and with DITA to see how we would do this, what are some of the skills gaps that we need to fill in tourism. The second issue is about airlift. How do we deal both with international and domestic routes and make sure that we don't lose the flights that have been put in? The increased accommodation capacity as a result of the World Cup needs to be monitored. And we've got to look at how we plan in the tourism industry across other sectors that cross-cut with us. Even at a provincial level, we need to look at the other industries that are influenced by tourism and vice versa, and how we can look at the total economic contribution of the cluster of industries that are related to tourism. In terms of moving forward, we've understood the necessity to work or with the International Marketing Council on the perception of safety and security. We need to be reducing the gap between the people who visit South Africa and those who do not visit. We need to give special attention to the perceptions of value for money. We've got to have more deals coming into the country. Obviously, in terms of resourcing, we now have a separate department, and this is critical. This is good for us. We have a draft national tourism sector strategy, which is going to guide the sector as a whole, and ensure alignment and integration so that we look at how we can be more competitively based and more advantaged. When this strategy is implemented, we will be looking at issues like the setting up of a national convention bureau. We will be looking at how we work within the industry to make sure that there's spread of tourism to the rural areas, and how we make sure that people stay longer, how we get people to spend more when they are in the country, because those are all the issues in the sector strategy. And we've got to look at trade agreements with other countries so that we unlock the potential of tourism through the trade agreements that we do as a country.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was it. Thanks. Just a note, I don't know if the other committee members noticed, we didn't have that last slide on moving forward, which was quite an important one. And may I ask through you that Jerry, perhaps is missing, makes that available to us? Okay. May I ask? One question and one point to make, Chair. It's actually quite an astonishing statement we've heard today about the tourist figures have been wrong all along. I mean, I don't know who else noticed that 7 million figure for 2008, but it jumped out of the page like me, which is why for the first time in a year I've stopped the presentation to ask. But, I mean, I wasn't entirely understanding of the explanation, because I did understand the point about the day visitors being stripped off. There's obviously something else that's happened, and perhaps if Ms. Singh has time after the presentation, she can confirm more of this. I wouldn't like to wait until the annual report comes out. I think we need to understand this figure now, because we've all been operating under a certain assumption that tourist numbers have grown from 1 million in 94 to just touching 10 million this year, and indeed the Minister made that point in Parliament not so very long ago. So I need to get my head around that, because we appear to have lost 2.5 million tourists, which is a big number out of 10 million. So that's the first point. The second one is that I do understand that the presentation today is an analysis of the competitiveness of the industry and the barriers to further growth. And I think it's been an exceptionally valuable presentation in the sense that there's a wealth of information here which really equips us to do our job far better. It does strike me, though, that what we've heard kind of begs the question, and many of these things, some of them are causes and some of them are effects. If we look at some of the statistics that have been presented, it is said they're very pithily. It's worse than it was before. We now need 16 tourists to actually create a job, other than the figure of 12, which my colleague to the left, Mr. Girant, will remember, asked a question about that some time ago. So, in fact, it's harder not to create a job than we had presently believed. And that, of course, although it wasn't explicitly mentioned in the presentation, is because 75% of our tourists from our neighboring countries are not staying very long and are not spending much money. So, of course, we don't get the high end of the market in such high percentages. And then, of course, with the new figures and the growth, we also know that most of the growth that we've had, the 4% per year in the last 5 years or so, really has not been our high-end market overseas, our long-haul destination tourists, but in fact our neighboring states. So the growth is a little bit stagnant in those areas. And if we are to turn those numbers around and create more jobs with less tourists, which I think everybody wants to actually speed up that economic growth rate, then quite clearly we have to get more people who are spending more. I mean, that's part of the solution, at least that part of the solution, not the only solution. And one then asks oneself, well, what is it going to take to get that right? And I think Roisin Singh very correctly looked at some of the perceptions. And to me, a very compelling slide was the people who had negative perceptions about safety and security in the number, and she could have put up another one about value for money, which we've also heard in the past in this committee. And people who actually visit the country have a far better impression than people who have never visited the country. So once you're here and you see the truth for yourself, you know that South Africa isn't as dangerous as it's made out to be, and you can forget about the gutter press in England and Germany and places like that really gave us quite a hard time just before the World Cup. Now that to me is an opportunity.
it's something we can overcome, and we know that the truth is better than the perception. So that it would be far worse if it was the other way around. Now, I mean, during the World Cup, we had a lot of tourists out there. My own experience, having interviewed, I did 105 face-to-face interviews with tourists around the country, is that 45% actually found the prices cheaper than they expected. Another 45-odd percent found it to be more or less back, you know, what it is like back home. So there is no problem about value for money in this country. In fact, most people are pleasantly surprised. Likewise on safety. Over 90% of people found the country to be very safe or safe. Very, very few felt unsafe, even better than the numbers we've seen today. This is my own research. So the question is, what are we going to do to make sure that that perception out there, which is unwarranted, and in many cases overstated, the negatives are overstated, how do we change that around? And I go back to my original point, which I've been making for a long time, and again, we have a figure there, 1.8 times more money spent in Australia, which doesn't have our problems, than in our own country. Surely we can do more to fund SA Tourism's marketing efforts overseas to actually change those perceptions. Because if you can change that, you can bring in people who are spending more in higher numbers. That brings down your average number of tourists per jobs created. We can get more jobs created. We can get a faster economic growth rate. It solves a whole lot of things simultaneously if we can just up our marketing budget. And I really would like Ms. Singh to comment on that, but Chair, again, through you, I really would like to see our committee try and interrogate those numbers a bit more over the next couple of months. Because I think we can really play a valuable role here in building our country if we just believe in it enough to advertise a little bit more. And I'd like to think, as I've said to you before on different occasions, at the Mega Summit, for example, the Mega Event Summit, maybe this is an issue that can cut across all party lines and we can all link hands here and say, as South Africans, we need to do a better job in marketing our country. Not because SA Tourism is doing a bad job, but I think they are underfunded. And surely as a committee, across party lines, we can jointly appeal and lobby for them to have a more effective budget. Because as you've seen from the numbers, it is one of the best drivers of economic growth and is one of the most successful sectors in the country. And therefore, we should be backing winners, in this case, the tourism industry. So I'm sorry I took so long, but I think it's an important point, and I really would like us to see play us a far more proactive role in that regard.
Thank you. Together, let's do it.
Yeah.
I'm Jomit.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. I would also like to add and say it is a useful presentation. It actually enables us to see where South Africa stands as compared to its competitors. Thank you very much for this. The points that are raised here in terms of visitors being reluctant to come to South Africa, that is the barriers that are mentioned here. To me, it makes me wonder whether departments that are concerned, the departments relevant to addressing those barriers, whether they are aware of this study. Does the Department of Tourism keep the study to itself, or do you make other departments aware? That is, departments which could be contributing to the Department of Tourism succeeding, for instance, in its mandate to ensure that the number of visitors in South Africa keeps increasing and increasing at higher and higher rates. I'm thinking, for example, about the one that seems to be very, very prominent, which is very understandable, the question of safety. The safety of the tourists. Who would come to a country when they know that they are not safe in that country? No one. So for me then, the departments that are concerned with that area, whose mandate is to ensure that our country is safe to move around in, they should be aware of this fact. So that you see when, for instance, the Minister of Safety and Security talks about safety and security in this country. He is not only referring to safety and security of the citizens of the country, but safety and security of even those who may have come to visit our country. Not only aware of that, but also to be aware of the fact that if the country is not safe to move around, not safe enough for people who are foreigners to move around here, then the department is contributing to the decline, if any, of the Department of Tourism to the economy of the country. I think, as Mr. Krumbok has already said, and as we all know, and which something that we really appreciate and understand, the fact that the Department of Tourism is contributing to the GDP of this country. It seems to me, really, other departments should be made to be aware of that, so that they contribute towards enabling the Department of Tourism to actually increase its contribution to the GDP of the country, because that then covers almost all of us in the sense that jobs are created, you see, by the department, but via the fact that everyone else is also contributing to ensure that the Department of Tourism carries out its mandate. We're talking about skills, for example, that the question of lack of skills is a kind of a barrier to the increase, you know, of the contribution of the department. And that makes me wonder whether, okay, you talk about the structures in tourism that are concerned with the training and the building capacity among those who are involved in the industry. But I'm asking the question as to whether, you know, the general standard of education, just the general standard of education in this country does not contribute to the fact that you are not able to attain the level of skills that you want to attain. Because it's of no use trying to train people, I don't want to say who are untrainable, but something like that, because their general level of education is not up to scratch. So to me, even the Department of Education, for example, should be made to feel that by not improving the general standards of education in this country, they are also contributing to the decline, you know, of the contribution of tourism in this country. What I'm trying to say is it should not only be the task of the Department of Tourism to ensure that, you know, this mandate is achieved, but also other departments now should take the Department of Tourism very, very seriously. Sometimes we do feel that, you know, the Department of Tourism is not taken very seriously in this country, and yet it is contributing so much to the GDP. So to me, this is the message that should be sent, you know, that everyone should work towards that, including transport, of course. Transport, I mean, is so important. You know, when we went to the Northern Cape in July, the provincial department there, the Department of Tourism and Economic Development, one of the things that they kept mentioning was that the Northern Cape is not that easily accessible to the tourists because there are very few airlines that fly into that province. So there is a potential. There's a potential everywhere. But it will not be the Department of Tourism, for instance, that is going to increase the number of flights that go to the Northern Cape, but it is the Department of Transport plus all other areas for which the Department of Transport is responsible. The question of the tourists being able to move freely in this country from one point to another. Of course, it involves so much that the state of the roads, the amount of public transport itself, well, say nothing about the cost. I don't know who is responsible for that one, but that's also something that South Africa needs to look into. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
My pleasure, Mr. Mokume.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Chair, maybe I'll take most of the comments as most of the contributions as comments. But I wanna come back to the question of how we are dealing with the perception. And I think the issue raised by Mr. Krumbok is quite relevant, because perception is not going to disappear on its own if we don't come up with strategies to deal with perception. As we've seen from the statistics here, most of the fears are driven by perception. I think there's a recognition now, even in government, that we really need to deal with this perception. Now, Chairperson, I'm going to have to ask for your indulgence to go and attend the ICTS cluster meeting, because it looks into our spheres of operation in terms of our international engagement. The Minister of Tourism has in the recent past participated in presidential visits with specific focus to deal with people who are involved in tourism. In China, the minister had an engagement with about 120 key people, starting CEOs, MDs, and chairpersons of companies that are involved in tourism. Their business is tourism. In that meeting, there were also people who were coming from the media, magazines that are essentially writing about tourism. So they attended that engagement with the minister. We found that kind of engagement very much useful, Chairperson, because in the meeting, we're able to address concerns, starting from the value for money, starting from certain barriers that are there, the visas and issues that are really affecting people from coming into the country. I'm saying this kind of engagement, it helps us to deal with the perception. The question of safety, actually, somebody from China said to us, we're not doing enough to deal with this perception that South Africa is very violent, that we need to do something in terms of our own strategy with respect to the Chinese market in this regard. But it's a very general perception, this question of crime. There is crime indeed, but I think there's a need to deal with it. If you realize, Chairperson, one critical thing that has been affecting us since 1994 is a perception. You would recall 94, 95, there was a perception that if President Mandela steps down, we're going to disintegrate into civil war, there will be a big slaughter, a bloodbath in the country. And this was mainly driven by the international media. So Mandela was seen as the only person who's holding this democracy together. Once he stepped down, there was an issue around crime. Crime became a big, big issue. Now, during 2010 World Cup, Chairperson, you would recall, all of us, I think we did watch the international media. There was nothing about crime during the World Cup. There was a focus on how tolerant we are as a country, the movement of people who have never been to townships to a very large extent, and the level of tolerance, and the excitement generated by the World Cup. But before the whistle was blown, we started to see large number of people on the streets that there's going to be xenophobic attacks and so on. Again, a very great deal of perception that it affects our own brand as a country. If you look at the information around the imminent xenophobic attack and the spirit during the World Cup, once Ghana remains as the only African country in the World Cup, the entire South Africa, without exception, rallied behind the Ghanaian team to support them. But 2 days later, there's a change in terms of perception that we are so much intolerant of fellow Africans. Now, these are issues that are driving this perception. Now, in this respect, I don't know. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. That there's really something that keeps on affecting us. If we deal with something, something comes up. Now, if we were to deal effectively with the question of this perception around xenophobic attack, I'm not sure if we're not going to get something coming up. But these issues are not going to disappear on their own if we don't come up with concrete strategies to engage the international community. Now, the Department of Tourism is highly involved in the ICTS cluster. In terms of strategy development, how we market the country abroad, how we devise our political strategies in engaging with the rest of the world. So we are highly involved in that. It helps actually to bring some of the elements that you've seen here into the cluster so that even the ministries, other ministries, are able to be sensitive to these issues and attend to them. Now, if you look at what we spend in our international relations, looking at the budget of DEC, it's quite huge. Do we get the value in terms of maximizing on tourism? I don't think we've done as well as we should have. In the past, Chairperson, you would know tourism was a branch in the Department of Environmental Affairs. So there's a paradigm shift that is coming up. And I think we really need even to swing the pendulum in terms of the interest on South Africa. Let's be driven by what we can offer. But this is not going to come on its own because we compete with the rest of the world. We need to reinforce this competition, this communication, particularly with the international community. That's one thing that I wanted to say. I think Roisin will also come back on the question of the statistics. But the stats need to be continuously interrogated. I think it's good that we are starting to realize ourselves that the registration of movement does not necessarily translate to tourism. If you look at the report of the Department of Home Affairs, they are saying during the 7th of June and the 11th of July, we've registered about 2 million people who came into the country. Now, that may be very deceiving if we were to take that as the number of tourists. So the process of really engaging these figures and interrogating them in details and really dissecting them, what is tourists, what is the day movement of people and so on, I think we need to continue to do this robust interrogation of the figures. We have decided to engage with the State South Africa in terms of the statistics so that they are properly explained. And I think that's where we're going to get better figures. We'll then be able to develop better strategies because we'd have accurate figures to deal with. But we are doing this interrogation ourselves together with State South Africa. And I think this is the first process. We'll continuously keep on interrogating those figures. Because, I mean, it would be good. I think it feels good for us to say we have these numbers when actually we haven't interrogated the details of reaching these numbers. I think maybe Roisin would come back on those numbers again. I'm very grateful that the committee realizes that we need to be capacitated. But I think there's a historical background, as we indicated. We came as a branch. We're a fully-fledged department. We've been squatting. I think we're about to get our own place and we'll increase our own capacity also as a department to be really upfront in terms of policy development, the analysis of markets, as she indicated, that we really need to look at some of the agreement that we can create that would actually start to unlock the potential of tourism in some of those countries that have never been traditional. I mean, if you look at the numbers in some of those countries, the numbers of people who are going abroad and so on, and what we are getting, it's not sufficient. So I think there are political instruments that we need to employ as well as the marketing instruments. So we need to employ both of them in order to unlock this. Chairperson, if you really permit me, I would like to also go to the other ICTS to ensure that these issues are not actually relegated to the periphery. They become part of the core function as we engage the entire world. Thank you.
In fact, you asked for to be released. I think it is granted. And perhaps let us continue and continue recording the questions and tracking the interaction and then later respond, please. And Mr. Makubale, we allowed him because he indicated earlier that he wanted to leave early. Thank you.
Don't seem to find where. Oh, thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I must say I have been largely covered by O Mamunjobe in her comments, but I do want to go further than that. We often talk of this skills capacitation. There's a skills gap. I'm wondering if the department has has ever offered, or maybe I missed out on something, has ever offered courses or upskilling methods to the people in the industry, especially the operators. Secondly, not to bridge the skills gap. Secondly, all this impacts on dissemination of information. I was just wondering also how far these presentations go. Do they come and end within the department, or is information given to other departments so as to synthesize the operations in the country? Because all these departments seem to be interdependent. The other thing is the investment portfolio.
I don't know what this is. Can somebody please, Roshan, please unpack this? What is planned? What is in the bag? Is there a finance house or a department that, or sub department that's going to deal with these with financing? I don't know whether it pertains to small operators or to the, I don't know where or know who benefits from this, if I did hear properly. Unfortunately, I don't even have a document to refer to. This is no affront to the secretary. It's just that I didn't get the necessary documents. Also, we are always talking of rural development, I mean, not rural development, but rural tourism. I'm getting so drummed by this, assertion that there's rural tourism, there's rural development, but you never see where it's going. Yes, I am aware that the municipalities, the local authorities have got to play a part, but I don't know where the synergy is between the national governments and the local operators, including the provincial operators. So I would like to see what exactly do we mean by rural tourism, because I haven't seen anybody really stretching out towards rural development, I mean rural tourism. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, in fact, I think sometimes we get bogged down by different definitions. For instance, if you go to the Drakensberg, there is tourism, that is rural tourism. Or the game parks. So I think we've got to, from a person that listens, to you saying rural tourism, they've got to understand exactly what you mean.
Mm.
If you get my point.
Yes, I do.
Separate Kruger National Park, or what we were seeing yesterday on Mubufu in the morning, that park in PE and so forth. Or perhaps, is it cultural tourism in the rural areas we are talking about? Or tourism, heritage tourism in the rural areas, that type of thing, so as to separate and understand exactly how to respond for people that need to respond. If you get me, sis.
Chairperson, thank you. I don't know who decides which areas have got to be made prominent, because yes, we know of the parks. They are so widely publicized. We know of heritage. There's so much that is talked about on heritage areas. But when you look into certain areas or provinces, you get so overwhelmed by what is available that has not been, ventured into. And you wonder now who decides and who epitomizes the idea in those areas. And you wonder now, what do we mean by rural tourism? Is it the struggle heroes' footsteps, or is it the animals? Or there's so much to be talked about, but when you go to these areas, you don't see any activity. Maybe the local authorities have got to identify their local areas and then amplify whatever they have seen and make the information available even to the national department, so that they can capture the identified areas and create some prominence around them.
Hope that the increased budget, if we win ultimately, will try and address some of those things.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is just a smaller comment. I think this issue of people thinking that the country is not safe, it needs to be investigated. If we wanted tourists to come into our country, because I don't think they just picked up in the air. Maybe there are people or sources that they are having inside the country that are giving them the information. Maybe they've got the research, we don't know. But as I've heard the presenter saying that, talking about the issue of the ICT, I think it will assist us. I was just thinking that how are we marketing ourselves internationally? Maybe the issue of ICT will make it sure even people who are marketing us overseas, they will use more effort to clarify some of the issues that people perceive as unsafe country. Maybe those things will make us to know, as she have already alluded, who's the real tourist and who's just coming to seek a refugee inside the country. Because most people, when they come here, we count them as tourists, only to find they are here to look for a place to stay. But if the department can go deeper together, a joint department, because they can, the tourism can do it alone. Lastly, where we visited Limpopo, this committee, I was just impressed by seeing the province of Limpopo marketing the rural area. I think even this committee, we used to talk about it and said, hey, we see this tourist around cities and whatever. But the speaker that was here, presenter that was here to present last time, they told us what is the challenge of some of the people don't want to grow this area of tourists in the rural. So I was saying, as this committee, we mustn't lose hope, because we can see the light there is coming in the tunnel. As I've heard, because I knew, I heard that you were squatting somewhere, now you are back. I think we must have hope. Thank you.
Yeah, I think part of the job is to have hope, and but also in some areas we had been to Limpopo, for instance, the roads to those places sometimes are terrible. You get an attraction like in Mavenda, it's so good as it is, but getting there is a big hassle. The access to those places, and then when you try to resolve that problem, you find that the mandate belongs to the local government. If it does not belong to the local government, it belongs to the provincial government. If it does not belong to the provincial government, it belongs to another department and not to tourism, and yet it affects tourism directly. That's why we decided that we also should have a summit to get all these players together and see how we get and get much more insight from the interaction. Over to you,
Chairperson. My colleagues are going to answer most of the questions from the department, but I just wanted to clarify the stats issue. As I was saying, what happened is up to the end of 2008, we were continuing to count people as visitors to the country, not someone who's coming here for refugee status
or coming here for to work. They were not counted. They called other. But anyone who is a visitor to the country was being counted. Now, what Stats SA then said to us is that in that number, there were people that were not spending a night. And we were under the impression that all the visitors were at least spending one night. So they began last year to clean up the data, and only from January 2009 to begin to then disaggregate people who are not sleeping over and people who are sleeping over. Now, it's fine for you to be a same-day visitor. You're still contributing in some way to the economy, but you're not sleeping over. So we then split out people who are, we call it all visitors, but then we split out a tourist as someone who is spending more than one night in the country and a same-day visitor. So what's happening now is Stats SA is only putting out the figures of tourists. They're not putting out the figures of visitors. But Mr. Kombuk is correct to point out that it's going to be a little bit confusing when you see the figure of 10 million, because that figure of 10 million is based on visitors. It's not based on tourists. And our difficulty, sir, is that we've set targets. When you set a target on something, you have to have at least 5 years of data to set a target. You can't set a target if you only got 1 year of data. So from South African tourism's point of view, we continue to set a target on visitor because until we have at least 5 years of tourists, we can't say, well, this is the target we want to meet. But we now continuously put out two figures. Visitors and tourists. So we have two tables, but Stats SA is only putting out tourists. So when we come to talk to you, we are going to continuously show you two sets of figures. But on this study, we decided to, we just guessed that the number of visitors based on 2009 was about 2.5 million, and we stripped them out so that we could give you a better figure on the jobs. Because if we gave you 9 million, then the jobs could have looked better. It could have looked at you need less people to create a job, but we would be lying to ourselves. So we thought let's split it out and give you a more real figure to work with, and give us a more real figure to work with. We are presenting the study also to the tourism industry quite widely. We've been taking it out and speaking to the industry to show them the figure as well. It's a better figure for us to work with because next time we do the study, which might be in 4 or 5 years, we will be working with a tourist figure. So I am sorry about the confusion. It's a difficult one for us to deal with because it comes from Stats SA, but we are working with it and we've been going around explaining what the two figures are.
Thank you. We will not necessarily go specific question by question because they were interrelated questions. What we'll do, if there's a question from one member to and the other member has asked a question that is related to that, the way we would answer that is to try and integrate the aspects of the two questions. There is a question about the issue of mandate, Honorable Chair, that you talked to. And one of the biggest barriers to tourism growth is that it essentially is dependent on every other sector. And in the prioritization of these other sectors, it is not necessarily the case that those sectors would have had tourism in mind in their own processes of planning. But to be able to address that, we do have cluster formations. Interdepartmental. And in these formations, one of the things that we have actually taken there was the new National Tourism Sector Strategy, the draft. That was before it went to cabinet. Now, the purpose of that was to make sure that these issues, because when these presentations are done, we wouldn't go to the cluster and just say, this is what the picture appears. What we do is we take out of this the message that is relevant to the particular department, that is relevant to the departments within that particular cluster. And we then say these are the things that we need to be able to resolve. So that is why some of the things that are mentioned in this particular presentation, as one goes into the national tourism sector strategy, one picks up the specific elements that are talked to here in terms of what it suggests should be done in order to be able to address that. Again, these platforms with industry, where the message also goes to the industry, to say these are the areas of concern, this is what the barriers are, and so on and so forth. A typical example would be if we were to get specific interventions about training. The industry knows best what actually works on the ground. So we don't go there and say, this is what you must do, which is why there was actually a skills gap analysis which led to the skills strategy. And in the process of implementing that, if industry is not actually the most integral part of that, it will not be successful. Now, that is also complemented, DJ was meant to talk about this before he left. It's also complemented by his own specific bilateral engagements. Over the past 2 to 3 months that he's been in the department, he has actually been meeting with other DGs, taking the specific issues that he believes need to be sorted out. From their side, when they plan, they should be able to integrate those other aspects as well. So those departments are fairly aware of what the challenges are. Of course, it also relates to the PEF. At the end of the day, if you look at the tourism budget overall, and it's even lower than the Kenyan budget for tourism. So that is significant. It's quite minimal. Now, the issue about investments, Anemi will talk to this a bit. What we do, we've got two instruments within the department. The first one is that what was termed the social responsibility program, which basically is the expanded public works program, would then put money into areas that have been identified, and this will not be for individual gain. But there is a process to go through that, and I'm told there was a presentation on the social responsibility program previously that goes at what do they look at, but the most important thing is there potential in that particular area? And if there is potential in that particular area, vis-a-vis the other areas, ultimately, what makes sense in terms of putting that money in? That is the side of government. But the other thing is, Roshini talked about the initial global competitiveness study that looked at areas in terms of geographic areas in the country that would have certain level of potential. These are areas that when you look at, you say, all they need is to make sure that there is proper infrastructure that goes into that particular place. They also need to make sure that as the infrastructure has actually been put in place, they will also be supporting investment that comes through. Now, this is an area where the investment does not come necessarily from government. This is the part that the department then plays is to package these potential areas to say, here you can actually invest, and this is what the kind of return can be if you were to put money into this kind of a thing. And this requires that the private sector should come into play, and they should be able to put money in there. Of course, if we look at the DTI, for instance, previously I think it has presented the schemes that they've got. So if we look at those particular schemes, they are also part of that investment promotion exercise. But we do need a much more coherent approach to promotion of investments into tourism. There are areas, there was a slide that actually identified those areas. So there are areas where if investment is put in there, there will definitely be some yield. The department has got an investment brochure that would tell you where and what people can invest in and so on and so forth, and that is available. So this is something that industry has got access to, and they know exactly these are some of the areas where they can actually. But the ultimate decision, obviously, is the person who's got the money to go and put it there to make sure that they can do that. The main one that I think is more related to what Robert was saying is that if the department has got this other scheme, what then influences the decision on where the money goes and so on? And that is what I was talking to say that the most important thing is it feasible? If it is feasible, how feasible is it compared to the other in terms of the yield? And if that is the case, then obviously ultimately, but the municipalities are involved in terms of sourcing and making sure that those proposals get to the department and the whole process throughout. And the province is also involved in terms of actually making sure that the implementation takes place. But there are other challenges, I must say. It's not straightforward. There's multiplicity of stakeholders. A typical example would be a situation where development needs to take place, but there's contradictory views within the community in terms of whether that's the kind of development they require. And if the community is not in unison in terms of that particular development, that means it's going to delay. And ultimately, it might be a year or two or so before that can actually take place. So there is a lot of other dynamics at play that ultimately need to be resolved before we can actually say, yay, yeah, something that is going to be built in this particular area. But it is possible. I think the one other issue that we can talk to is the issue about airlift. And Roshini, you can also talk to this issue. Essentially, we find that it's not because there is no frequency in terms of the fact that one can fly from here to the other place. It is because of the investment that must go into that particular route to make sure that it can actually be utilized. A typical example would be if you've got a permit that allows you to fly to a particular area and you have not been able to get the numbers out of that area, then it begins not to make business sense to actually operate within that particular area. Now, the solution to this, obviously, is to generate the numbers. Now, the slides have shown clearly, and this is based on scientific research, 24 million people are willing to come here. Now, that is telling, but what we are getting is not that. We are getting less than a million. So it does mean that there are people somewhere that can actually travel. And of course, if we were to get more and more flights down here, it would be cheaper also to come here in terms of the value for money issue. But the reality of the matter is that unless if we've got sufficient money to be able to stimulate these markets proper, it will not be easy. It will not be easy. And it is clear that we as a sector, there is huge contribution already made into the GDP. So that's a direct injection into the fiscus. And there's a clear case that we could actually get a lot more than what we are actually getting at the moment.
Thank you. Yeah, in fact, just going back to what was raised by Mampam Magwanya around these resorts, you find there are places like the Wild Coast, the places like Mkababa, P.E., around there, in PE, there are already some structures next to the beach. Well, I think they have been built by the municipality or provincial government. I do not know. Where if we form PPPs, public partners, public private partnerships, and have an anchor tenant, for instance, that Wild Coast around Port Edward, and then get the cooperation of the local government, the provincial government, and the national government are in the same way that we worked for the projects of the World Cup, and build a resort there, like Mkababa, and have an anchor tenant like Pearl, Southern Sands, or whoever for the different sections of the market, and then push the project. I think that there can be areas that can be developed in the same way that for rural development. But now the problem is that once you start operating, then environment comes in, then councillors come in, then it becomes very difficult to realize development in South Africa, and everyone is more powerful than government. So now how do you then move? These are sometimes some of the considerations that can only be solved by a team broader than tourism, but also politicians at different in their different roles have to have a buy-in, so as to, for these things to be supported at all levels. Because if they are not supported at all levels, then it becomes a problem. National government issues a budget, and then the local government uses that same budget for something else.
Okay.
They don't care whether it is a conditional grant or whatever, they just use it. and after using it, say that they are not having a financial manager, and that's it. So now it's these actual problems when you start operating. You go to the Wild Coast, somebody tells you that, no, there's a wreck there that is not there anyway. And the snake, 5 kilometers down, that is not having any habitat. And you find that it takes 5 years, 10 years to develop until the momentum of the 2010 FIFA World Cup is gone.
Nice.
And we are back again. So I think we've got to take care of those and try and build partnerships, build alliances. In moving forward, and then get everyone's support. And then on the issue of safety, there was Mr. Tatalias here on the 31st of August. He said that they are having a tourism safety initiative, which looks at safety now, the issue of definition. They look at crime. They look at health issues like cholera, AIDS, malaria, those types of things. They look at driving, road safety on the roads. They look at water quality, sanitation, those types of things. So I think we've got to develop say our own vocabulary. There is a specific name for this now. I don't know what to call it. So that we do understand each other. When you say safety, I know exactly what you mean. When you say tourists, people know exactly what we mean. So as to avoid talking past each other. For instance, given this new statistics, there should be a statisticians that I like who should indicate the deviation and what caused deviations, and then the corrected figure afterwards, and then so that we can compare, the figures can compare after some time. I think those people that have learned statistics can assist in assisting what caused the deviation and make a correction so that we have actual figures that we can work on. And I don't know whether there are any other questions. We are having about 20 minutes, but let us make it 15 minutes up to 5 to 12 so that people can move to the next, to the meetings in time.
Honorable Chair, just to say that on the question of statistics, we are scheduled back here in a week's time with Statistics South Africa. And the DDG directly responsible for these statistics will be here
answer some of these questions. The whole satellite account will be presented, and how they arrive at this, how they calculate, and so on and so forth, and what the ultimate statistics mean, and so on. So we are back here again next to.
I think we do not compete with scientists in their work. What they've got to tell us is that this is the correction factor, and perhaps how we came about to have that figure. But it doesn't have to be detailed, because we are not going to understand what they mean, you see. So we want something that we understand. Any other questions? Mam Chivas.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My concern is as far as crime is concerned in the safety of the country. I believe during FIFA there was a lot of propaganda, which I don't know how the departments really responded to such propaganda, which somehow could have stopped our tourists to visit South Africa. Because there was that propaganda which says that there will be 2 million prostitutes who will be coming during FIFA, which somehow I believe that some of the visitors couldn't come because of that. So as the Department of Tourism, how do you interact with the certain security, as well as transport is concerned, as a department? Because sometimes you can see the numbers or the statistics shows that there are no more, we don't have a lot of tourists. It's only visitors. But somehow, the media had, somehow tempered. Sometimes they do temper with our tourists. So one would want to know, how do you communicate if such stories or such news really are really published to the world that South Africa is not saved by this fact? One indicated about the issue of xenophobia, and then this propaganda of media.
Yeah, I think let us not be understood to be saying that there is no crime, mm-hmm. violent crime in South Africa. There is, mm-hmm. but it is there like it is there in other countries. Mm-hmm. If you go to Spain, you get told you should not go there. You should not go there. Areas are known, dangerous areas. You are told beforehand. If you venture into that area, you don't blame the government. You blame yourself because you have been told that don't go to another, to Zola in Soweto. It's there are areas. They're in every place. Like in Durban, you'll be knowing that some sections in Kwamashu you are not supposed to get there. And but now the thing is that communication has got to factor those things in such a way that responsible people do not get hurt. They are not these things, victims of crime and so forth and so forth. And then indeed you find that people are safe. But now if you are going to be robbed in outside of O.R. Tambo, now it creates a problem, because now even in your propaganda now you cannot say that there is no area that is safe. So it's these things, but communication. But now, once more, the budget of the Department of Tourism does not allow them to outsource that thing, because I do not know whether they can afford to pay a communication specialist that can convey some of these messages, because in some instances, that person gets paid more than the DG. So once somebody is paid more than the DG, you cannot employ them in government. So it becomes a problem. And that is the problem that made the government create SARS as an autonomous body. These are the problems, but they cannot be solved by Department of Tourism only. It is not their responsibility. But I do not know whether they can respond, but in some instances, these problems can be solved by all of us together.
Chairperson, you're absolutely right on that one. It is the biggest barrier that we face when we also, outside the country, speaking to trade and media and other people. So what we have done is we have done some work. The main thing is we know that word of mouth is important. So when we do our marketing work, we make sure that we use people who have been to the country as the spokespersons, so that they are the ones that are talking about their great experience here. And they don't have to mention the word safety. They just have to talk about what a wonderful time they had. And people see, oh, if you can do it, I can do it too. So, you know, South Africa has something to offer you, and you are like me. So it's about finding the people that are like the people that we are attracting to the country, which is important for us. But we've also taken both General Cele and his team with us when we were marketing for the World Cup and marketing the destination over the last 2 years to key forums to speak to media. Because, you know, media wants the facts and the figures, and it's not just the nice things that we as tourism people say. So using the safety and security people was also very good for us, because it's important to keep the media informed. If we don't want them to be negative, we've got to keep them informed, and we've got to have a good relationship with them so they feel they can ask us. You know, they're going to write what they want to write because it's sensational, but at least in having these functions where we had press conferences and it was one-on-one with key editors and key media people, with the safety and security people, with us and our minister, we were able to deal with some of these matters. And I also want to say that we often think it's the Europeans, in Europe, I mean, who have this problem with safety, but in fact it's worse in Africa. So people in Kenya and Nigeria are the ones that are most scared. And so when we're out there and we go out with other bilaterals that are going on, we've got to show the welcoming nature. And I think the World Cup did that, and that was great. But it's about showing that we are friendly and we're welcoming as a destination to you. Because, you know, there may be some criminal elements out there, but the general public of South Africa is welcoming and friendly. And that's what we keep trying to put across in the marketing work that we do. And then I want to say one more thing, because there was the issue about rural areas, etc. I think, you know, it's a long discussion one can have, but one thing that happened during the World Cup that was very nice is that transport was a big issue in terms of making sure that people were transported to the games, etc. And what was nice to see was the work that was done with small business operators. The small business operators can't go and sell their services internationally because they don't have the kind of insurance and other things that are needed to carry the passengers. But the big operators did the transport deals, and then they used the small guys and women to make sure that, because they didn't have enough. So there were some nice synergies and alignment that was happening where small businesses, people who had transport, were really being used by the bigger companies. And I think it's one of the good stories that we will hear afterwards.
Okay, let us try and close this hearing, except if there's something very, very special. And I think in the hearing we all agree that South Africa is a great destination. We are still satisfied it is. And we agree that tourism cannot do it alone. It needs other partners, and we've got to create synergies right through other departments and other committees as well. Those of us that belong to more than one committee I think we've got to preach the word in the other committees as well. I know there are people from arts and culture. I think we've got to get the support from our members. There are people from public service. There are people from other departments, from other committees as well. So let us preach the gospel of synergies wherever we are in other committees. The issue of perceptions, it needs to be worked for, but I think above all it needs more budget for marketing and then for promoting South Africa as a destination. And then there is the issue of statistics. DDG has told us that they'll be coming later to explain how they are going to factor that so that we can compare what we have with what, because we had 9 million tourists. We're working for a figure of more than 10 million. So now, if it has been downscaled, and then we know how it was downscaled, then we are going to be in a position to remove what we removed and get the figure that we are supposed to get. There is an area of skills. Skills development, the development that is supposed to be attended to. And then new areas that need innovation in our approach, that need partnerships. Partnerships from parliament, partnerships from all other departments. These are the things that have to be done. And then I have not had any mention of how we are using our embassies to convey the messages that we want to convey. Perhaps that is another avenue to use. If we have used it, let us hear what we have done in your embassies.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. What has happened was that in the revision of the international relations strategy for the country, certain specific departments were identified as core within that. Tourism was one of those departments. This meeting that DG is going to attend deals with those issues specifically. Now, one of the initiatives in that strategy is to ensure that we maximize the use of embassies, not just for tourism, but also for investment and so on. So they don't just become diplomatic missions dealing only with political work, but they should also be dealing with issues of investment where we don't have presence, for instance, of TISA, where we don't have presence of SAT, but we do see that there's some level of potential. Then there's going to be some interrelation with the particular embassy. And one of the other things that we are going to do in this regard, when there's a planning session for DIRCO, they bring all these ambassadors back. And they would say, now is the planning time for Asia Pacific or for the Americas and so on. That platform now we are able to access so that we actually put through the specific message, but also get feedback from them in terms of what are the issues that are coming from those specific markets. So there's going to be a lot of working together. I think it also works better because our DG was a DDG with DIRCO, so he's got some understanding of the system and being an ambassador previously and the CEO being an ambassador previously. So there will be some synergy with it.
Thank you. There are other areas as well, like the airlift strategy and getting more slots to places like Kimberley, East London, and so forth, which are not big towns. And I do understand that the big airlines are not prepared to get there. But the airlines that compete with bus coaches like Greyhound and so forth in terms of price, I think something can be explored from the if the Department of Transport can allow that to happen. And then there was the issue of visibility of tourism. I think we've got to be more visible as a department now. We are no longer a program in the Department of Environment and Tourism. But we are not seeing as much visibility as we ought to. So let us all try as well to do that. I'm sure our budget does not allow us to promote ourselves that much, but let us also allow for that. And lastly, this negative reporting during the World Cup. CNN had a program telling people about crime in South Africa with security companies and so forth and so forth. Right during the World Cup, after all those things had been disproved, but they were selecting areas that were violent. So we are going to have to fight this fight, but in order to fight this fight, we'll need more money for marketing and then public relations. I think, let us, before we close, if she wants to say something.
No, thank you, Chairperson. I see that you are very reluctant to close the meeting, so we may as well continue talking.
I am.
Just to allude to something which actually whose implementation may not necessarily depend on tourism. Maybe it impacts on SAA and Department of Transport. SAA Airlink's operations, especially to the Transkei, they are hopeless and they impact negatively on tourism in the area. And you find that their flights are so erratic. You find that sometimes the passengers are diverted and dumped in East London, and no alternative transportation is ever offered to the passengers who were actually destined to go to maybe the Wild Coast, and the only route was to go through Mthatha, and nothing happens. And I believe that this has got to be taken up. I don't know who exactly is going to take it up, but I know it negatively impacts on tourism in the area. Thank you.
Thanks. I think we said in the Freedom Charter, monopolies should be dealt with. I think it's high time. Where there are monopolies, let us get competition so that we minimize this. But I think we can only do this together. If there are buses, there can be Kulula. We know that now. There can be Mango. We know that now. So let us close on that note, that we are going to work together, emphasize synergies in government, in all departments, and then each and every one of us in their small nook will do something to promote South Africa as a great destination. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah. Let me hobble along. I hope you didn't capture my rustling around.